Good morning, Southwest Florida. It's 11:06 and time for the Dr. Triana Show, brought to you by the Triana Center for Hormone Balance. This is a live medical talk show in which we encourage you to call us and participate. Our studio lines are wide open right now at 206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now, our host in the program, Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Oh, we are, what a show we're going to have for you today. Everybody's got to listen. What's the topic?
A very, very important show for this time of year, especially as we're preparing for the summer and what the summer may bring weather-wise.
And we have with us such a great guest. We have Wayne Saliday. He is the director of the Office of Emergency Management for the past 28 years. I tell you, when you hear Wayne speak, he is so comforting. I know I went through Hurricane Charlie by myself, and to hear him on the radio, welcome. Welcome, Wayne.
Good morning, Dr. Triana. Good to be with you. Yeah, it's been a long haul. And, you know, my parents warned me. My grandmother said, you know, you'll get old someday, and you'll find out how fast things go when you get older. Sound like Hippo there. Hippo had an attack on air this morning. But, you know, it's true. As you get up there and as you pass the 60 mark, and time just seems to, the pages flip on that calendar so fast. And I am much, much, much closer to the end of my career than I am the beginning. In the home stretch, probably about another 2 years or so. And then so after 35 years in county government, I'll be moving on to my next career. So
we're going to talk about that. You're preparing. We're going to talk about that. But we want to tell everybody, what are the lines? 206-1580 or toll free 888-441-1580. So the topic today is health and hurricanes. And we all know, you know, you remember that commercial? It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
That's right. Absolutely. Boy, you're taking us way back.
You remember that?
I do, of course.
And it was a commercial. And boy, when Mother Nature comes aboard with those hurricanes, I wonder, Wayne, you're the person. You're the forefront of acute situation. What in your life led you down that path?
Well, I was in county government and in the property appraiser's office for 7.5 years. And my last 2 years there, our office was in the courthouse. I started working with my predecessor, who was called the Disaster Preparedness Coordinator. And my background being in radio and television, my degree from FSU in communications with an emphasis on radio and television, I had come on board as his public information officer in emergency situations. So I got to work in the office during, if you remember, Hurricane Elena back in 1985 that threatened the west coast of Florida for 3 days over Labor Day weekend. And that was the first big event that we worked. And when he said that he was going to retire in early 1987, I started thinking, you know, there's a job that I think I could do. And my interest in hurricanes goes back to the second year that we lived here, 1965. And you were a little too young because you'd have been in first or second grade at Peace River.
Was that Donna?
Betsy. Betsy.
Oh, I remember Hurricane Betsy.
And they dismissed us early from Peace River Elementary. And we figured out even this morning, we were there at the same time.
Yeah.
But they dismissed us early. And I got on the bus, and I'll never forget. I always sat up front because I like to talk to the bus driver. I talk to everybody. But I tapped her on the shoulder, and I said, Miss Jessie, Jessie Norton. Miss Jessie Norton was my bus driver. And I said, Miss Jessie, why are they sending us home? What's this hurricane stuff? So she started telling me about Hurricane Donna from 5 years earlier. And she said, oh, darling, nothing, you know, it's nothing to get excited about. It's not going to be a big deal. They just want to be sure everybody's safe. And I'm thinking, wow. Well, the next thing I knew, the palm trees in front of our house were bending over, touching the ground. And we had about 6, 8, 10 inches of rain, whatever it was. And the water was from stoop to stoop across our street, across LaSalle Road, where I grew up. And I was just fascinated. fascinated by the whole hurricane meteorology thing. So flash ahead to going to college, I went to FSU and decided I was going to be a meteorologist. Well, that worked out real good until I started with the math. And that ended that plan in a heartbeat. So I backpedaled, went into broadcasting, and actually got a minor in meteorology and another minor in psychology. But so I never became a meteorologist, but I've worked my way through a lot of study and a lot of history into a position where I have actually been declared a by the courts a Florida hurricane historian. A court.
I didn't know that.
Well, I've testified in a couple of different cases.
I love history,
and so I have read extensively, many volumes about Florida's hurricanes and the history of Florida hurricanes, and going back as far as we have records, back into the early 1800s.
So. Well, I remember Hurricane Donna. Mm-hmm. I was a little kid, and I remember Hurricane Betsy. And my little sister, when I would come home and I didn't pick up my room, she'd put a sign on my door, "Welcome home, Hurricane Betsy."
Oh, jeez.
Because everybody who knows
isn't
me.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Because everybody knows me knows that my nickname is Betsy, so.
But it came, that storm came across the tip of Florida, over the Keys, and then passed just to our southwest in the Gulf, and gave us a pretty good brush, but really didn't create any significant problems. And then, of course, it was after that that we went into the lull in hurricane activity, the period of less than what would be considered normal, because hurricanes come in peaks and valleys of 25 to maybe 30 years. You'll see a lot of activity, and mm-hmm. then you'll see a downturn in activity. And you can track that all the way again back to the mid-1800s and see those periods of activity. And so, after we got out of school and I went to high school and then into college, there just wasn't a whole lot going on. And but when I got involved with the office and learned a little bit about what was involved, I started thinking, I'm seeing things that I wanted to do if I were to be,
Right.
So I applied for the job along with, I think there were 52 applicants or something from all over the country for the job. And when the committee interviewed me, they said, why in the world would you be interested in this thankless job? And I had, at that point in time, I was just my kids. My youngest was 3 years old. And we were contemplating adopting a second of the four we ultimately adopted. And I answered the committee by saying, if I'm going to live in this community and raise a family, I'd rather see me in this job than anyone else. And they're like,
that's a great answer.
They're like, that's pretty cool. So they took a shot. And 28 years later, I'm now the senior emergency manager in the state of Florida out of 67 counties.
Oh my!
In terms of service, length of service.
That is so awesome to be involved with, because to me, being at the center of something when you're acute or in danger is very stressful.
Well, it's funny. But I've always been one that has been cut out for that for some reason.
Since a little kid?
Yeah.
You were the take charge one, the little kid?
Pretty much. But, it's funny. So many people were so greatly impacted by Charlie. And yet at the same time as Charlie, talk about life changing,
yes.
career changing. At the same time as Charlie, I'm going through a divorce. And I was already separated at that time. And, it was just one more, but I knew I had a job to do. And I had prepared for 17 years. The day Charlie hit us, for that one very special moment, which was the hours before, and then, of course, the immediate hours after, and then the weeks after, as we were subsequently challenged by three more hurricanes. And so that's where I really began to take a significant interest in the post-disaster psychology and the aspects of mental health in disasters. And interestingly enough, here I am taking a collegiate graduate
yes.
course now in disaster mental health. So.
You said that your next chapter, talk
next
about
career.
Your, but I want to talk about other things too, but I want to hear
that's
about
okay.
your next, we'll jump ahead and talk about your next chapter.
Well, my next career is going to be as a university instructor. I have been hired as adjunct faculty to begin with at a small state university in South Carolina. No, I don't have to move there. I'll be doing it online. And right now, I'm in the third semester of graduate study towards my master's degree in emergency management.
And working full-time.
And working full-time, yeah. I get up, like today, I was up at 4:15, entering into a discussion. Most of the stuff, when you're online, most of what you do is discussion-based. It's born of your experience. You talk about things that you've directly had that impacted you, and you share those with your classmates. We have people in the fire department. We have people that are police officers. We have a sheriff. The sheriff in Columbia, South Carolina, Richland County, is in our program. So there's a fascinating array of people in various disciplines. I'm the only one from out of state. I'm the only one with, direct emergency management experience.
I was going to say, how many have really hands-on gone through a hurricane?
Well, some of these folks early in their careers had gone through Hurricane Hugo in South Carolina. That was 1989. So Hugo, this September 22nd, will be the 26th anniversary of Hugo. It hit September 22nd of 1989.
So I know that, and if anybody has any questions for Wayne, give us a call at 206-1580.
Yeah, maybe you'll have a question like, what should I have in my preparation kit? What should I do to prepare? What, it could be anything.
Well, I know that one of the things talking about health and hurricane is that a lot of people after Hurricane Charlie used to just drop by our office just to make sure we were okay. Mm-hmm. And also, they didn't have access to their medicines. Or they forgot what medicines, and it's a good thing that we had samples, and just to come and talk. People wanted to just know that you're alive.
And one of the good things in that regard, Doctor, is that now with subsequent state laws that have been passed, we've addressed many of those issues. We've addressed issues like medicine, like gasoline, which became difficult to get.
Oh, yes.
The interstate stations by the interstate now all have to have generators in order to pull that gas out of the ground if there's no power. The grocery stores, the big box stores and others have to have generators that they can either bring in or have. If you go to like Publix, for example, every Publix grocery store now has an on-site generator at the store. So there's no more waiting while stuff rots and all that sort of stuff. They most likely are going to be open. If the store is intact, they're going to be open quickly.
So hello, caller. What's your name?
Good morning. My name is John. I was listening to your program, and we retired from New York, and we were in Myrtle Beach on that. We were there 3 days before Hugo came through. And I was listening to him talking. They came around and told everybody to leave.
He said he was in Hugo.
Yeah. We had just retired, and we're heading for Florida, and we stopped at Myrtle Beach. And they told everybody, we were there like 3 days, the hurricane's coming to leave. Went up to south of the border, and they said it was coming that way. We went down to Georgia and got in between big trailer. We were in the trailer, and it passed. It went up north.
That's a fascinating story.
And yeah, I mean, for living in New York, we never really had, like, hurricanes.
Sure. Yeah, no, and you had to go way back before, to see some of the big storms that came up over Long Island. And
Yeah, that was back in the 39s. Mm-hmm. And
38.
That's when we were kids in those days.
Right, the great 38 hurricane came over Long Island and came to be known as the Long Island Express.
Yeah.
It then went up.
Well, I was born in 33, so yeah. I was a little kid, but I remember.
And it went up and devastated New England, Providence, and Boston and other areas.
You got a fascinating job. I mean, we listen to Dr. Triana all the time, and she got a good program all the time.
Yes, she does. Very good.
Thank you.
When you said about Hugo, that brought back the scary thoughts.
And his point, Hugo trapped many people on I-95, and that's where they were, coming from New York, down 95. And they were, people that were stopped, that were there. Whether they were in Myrtle Beach or if they were, there's a place called Pawleys Island that was devastated
Island,
on the north side.
Like when we were heading, I think we were heading south on 95. I think everybody was heading north.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the name of it. Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
All the traffic was going north.
Yeah.
But we were going south with nobody. We went to, because the hurricane was going the other way.
Yeah. Well, you know, the hurricane actually came right up just north of Charleston, came in, drove the storm surge across little towns called Awandaw, Copahee, McClellanville. All these communities, they're north of Charleston, all along U.S. 17 that starts right here in Punta Gorda.
Yeah.
But the storm came in and brought a 21-foot storm surge.
How did people live through
to those little villages? Well, some didn't. Some didn't.
Oh,
many evacuated.
Gosh.
Many
that's a scary road, that road, too.
Yeah.
It's all like woodsy and everything.
Yep. Well, it wasn't after September 22nd because it blew down. Hugo is the greatest tree blowdown in American history. More trees lost in Hugo than any other hurricane because it went right up over my sister. My late sister lived in Camden, South Carolina, and it went right up US 601 all the way up towards Charlotte. And the interesting thing about Hugo that stands out, Hugo did $1 billion damage in Charlotte, North Carolina, 300 miles from the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, my.
300 miles from where she made landfall, she did $1 billion damage.
That's amazing. Well, that's like with Hurricane Charlie. Who would know Arcadia would get hit like that?
And who would know Orlando would get 105-mile-an-hour winds like they did and also have $1 billion damage in Orlando? That's a place.
Yeah, well, we were lucky when Hurricane Charlie hit. We were living in Cape Coral.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got the fringes, but it blew down all the trees and it caused damage, but not like in Punta Gorda.
You were lucky that Charlie was such a tiny storm.
Yeah.
So very small.
For a while, they thought it was coming into Cape Coral.
Mm-hmm. We sure did. Yeah.
But it just kept going. So.
Well, John, thank
you.
You
never know where it's going to go. That's for sure.
Thank you for giving us a call.
Nice listening to you guys. So I'm going to hang up and let somebody else get on.
Okay, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Bye bye. I know part of your job is public education, but how many seminars do you do a year?
Well, it's not really when you say seminars.
Or talks.
It's talks. I mean, I do talks to, case in point, I was invited yesterday to come speak at the Murdoch Baptist Church. I had a talk earlier this week. In fact, I had two earlier this week at two of our retirement centers where I do an in-service for the staff. And then they invite the families of the residents to come and hear what we have to say. But I've got talks booked all the way up through even some into early August. But it averages, and don't forget, I go to every school. I talk to every fourth grader every year.
I didn't know. You go to fourth graders?
Every fourth grader every year for 28 years. And I've had the honor and privilege of speaking to 35,000 10-year-olds.
Oh, my. Hello, caller. What's your name?
Hello, this is Pat.
Hi, Pat. This is Dr. Triana. What's your question, Pat?
I'm curious. If Charlie had brought storm surge at its wind speed, how devastating, where would the flooding have gone and how bad would it have been?
I'm really glad that he asked that question.
Great. I'm glad I have you here to answer the question.
Because we can get into some detail that doesn't get too confusing, all right? But let's talk about that issue. It used to be, up until like right now, that we always looked at a handy-dandy chart on the wall that said category one. Well, actually started with tropical storm. Tropical storm, 5 to 7 feet of storm surge, okay? Hurricane, up to 9 feet, category one, up to 9. Category two, up to 13. Category three, up to 18. Category four, 24. Category five, 30 feet plus. Okay? That's what we always used. Charlie started the move towards changing all of that because Charlie was a borderline category five hurricane when he got to us. Winds of 150 with gusts to 190 in downtown Punta Gorda. By the book, Charlie should have been bringing us a storm surge of upwards of 22 to 25 feet, but he couldn't because he was so small. His radius of maximum wind That's the wind that sticks out on the right side of the storm.
Okay.
All right. Now, when I talk to the kids, to the fourth graders, we talk in kid terms. And I talk to them about Nemo. Every kid knows Nemo, the little fish that had a withered right fin. And he couldn't swim correctly because he had a withered right fin. Well, Charlie was the Nemo of hurricanes. His right side was so anemic, only extending out 8 miles, okay, that he couldn't grab a lot of the Gulf waters and sling them at the coastline. A few years later, 3 years later, out in Texas, a storm named Ike, only a Category 2, okay, which should have brought a maximum surge of maybe 11 feet, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 feet, depending on the tide, he brought a storm surge of 25 feet as a Category 2.
That's like a 5 or more 4.
Almost, yeah, it was a level 4, but it's because his right side was 100 miles out from the center. And he had spent 2 days after he crossed western Cuba and got into the western Atlantic. He had 2 full days over the open water to push that water towards the Texas coast with relentless winds. And that water got to the Texas coast and then crossed over the barrier islands up the Houston Ship Channel into the suburbs of Houston, Texas, more than 20 miles from the Gulf. Now,
that's far.
Our highest potential storm surge, the question was posed, where would it be in a big storm? The storm surge up the Peace River at a little community, you know it well, Peace River Shores, it's on the DeSoto County line.
Yes.
Would be 35 feet of water.
Well, that's a great question.
Because of the narrowing of the river, and it's the sciences of bathymetry, okay, hydrology, they all come into play, the movement of water, and that water pushed through the passes into the harbor and then up that channel. You talked about Donna, 1960. Donna came east of Punta Gorda and Fort Myers and pushed all the water out of the Peace River. Most people have heard me talk about this. It was nothing but mud flats from Punta Gorda to Charlotte Harbor, okay? And in fact, over there where you guys grew up on Harborview Road, across the road, you could have looked over there and seen nothing but mud going out over to Punta Gorda.
It sucked it off.
All right? It pushed it. The winds out of the northeast pushed the water out. Mm. But we can take Donna today, the parameters of Donna, her size, her speed, her strength, and we put her on the track of Gabrielle, which people don't remember because it came 3 days after 9/11, Friday, September 14th of 2001, and brought us a storm surge of 6.2 feet, flooded 300 Charlotte County homes, okay? But nobody remembers unless they were one of those homes because our minds were focused elsewhere on New York, Washington, Pennsylvania. But if Donna were to come back today on the Gabrielle track, which came into Osprey in Sarasota County, the storm surge at downtown Punta Gorda from that type storm would be 18 feet.
Oh, my. That would
have flooded. The elevation in front of River City Grill, for example, is 5. So you do the math. Port Charlotte Town Center Mall, elevation's 12 feet. That would be 6 feet of water in the mall. And people say, well, wait a minute. The mall's nowhere near the water. Yeah, but there's canals that are right there, right beside, and that's where the water transfers. It comes up the canals. The story I tell about the gentleman that used to come to the cultural center every year, and he'd talk about how he wasn't worried about storm surge. And then he'd giggle and he'd say, my buddy Bob's in trouble. I said, why is that? Well, Bob, he lives about 4 blocks over from me, and he's on a canal. He gonna get it, isn't he? And then he'd laugh, and I'd say, yeah, about 30 seconds before you do.
Well, caller, thank you for calling, Pat.
Thank you.
That was a great answer. Let's take a little break, and then we have Wayne Saliday here, Director of the Office of Emergency Management of Charlotte County, Senior of all of Florida. Let's take our little break.
Okay, guys, listen up. You feel like a 70-year-old man in a 45-year-old body, can't work out like you used to. Maybe your testosterone is low. You know, testosterone is the dipstick of men's health. Levels decline after 30, accelerated by a variety of environmental chemicals that can convert the reduced testosterone you are producing to estrogen. That's the female hormone, and not good. You can change all that at the Triana Center for Hormone Balance. There, your hormones are measured, a thorough physical done, and a program to restore your hormone balance is laid out for you. Bioidentical hormone pellets are inserted beneath the skin every 4 to 5 months by a certified Bio-T physician. 15 minutes and you're on your way to feeling better, having more energy, improved muscle tone, and renewed interest in your sex partner. Yay! Still not convinced? Go to the Bio-T website. That is BioteMedical.com. Then call 625-1990 for an appointment that will change your life.
Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Triana. Let me balance your hormones with Bio-T. Call me at 941-625-1990 for your appointment.
Good morning. It's 11:31. We return now to the Dr. Triana Show, brought to you by the Triana Center for Hormone Balance. Our phone lines are wide open at 206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now back to Dr. Elizabeth Triana and our special guest, Director of Emergency Management, Wayne Saliday.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad we've had some great questions. We have such a knowledgeable and someone who has been through the biggest event that I can remember of Hurricane Charley. When you were sitting there, Wayne, when did it hit you that this was going to hit us? What was your feelings?
You know, there really wasn't time to stop and sit and contemplate, because things were happening so quickly. I had been there that Friday morning. I think I left home a little before 4 o'clock, got in early for the 5 o'clock advisory that comes from the Hurricane Center so that I could ascertain what we thought it was going to do and what further we might have to do in the way of protective measures. We had ordered an evacuation the previous day, Thursday, effective at noon for all mobile homes, manufactured homes, barrier islands, travel trailers, RVs. I wanted them out because we knew we were going to get, we were under a warning. We had just been placed under hurricane warning. When you're put under hurricane warning, take it to the bank, jot it down.
And
you're going to get hurricane winds. All right. So we were expecting winds of category one to close to category two strength, which is a category one is 75. Okay. Up through to 95. All right. Beyond 95 to 110 is category two. So we were looking at category one, maybe borderline gust to two, because the storm was expected at that time to pass off the coast maybe 100 miles out. Well, that 100 miles started to diminish during the morning hours, all right? And by the time we got to the 11 o'clock advisory, they had the storm ticketed for Bradenton, all right? Which was bringing it a lot closer to us. But we had already seen subtle hints on the radar that storm was, at first we called it a wobble. It was wobbling to the right. Now, they will do that. Sometimes they will do that, and then they'll get back onto the track. But this did not continue to be a wobble. It became a trend. And that trend, as one of the previous callers said, the gentleman that lived in Cape Coral at that time, it was coming straight at Cape Coral. It then straightened out a little bit and continued to the north. It eventually came over North Captiva Island, actually cut a hole in the island called Charley's Cut. And I'll show you a picture of it so you get a better feel for what I'm talking about, which we later saw from the air and took pictures of. But it cut a hole right in the island and then entered Charlotte Harbor. And I think it was at that point, at around 3 o'clock or thereabouts, that I was acutely aware that this was now coming directly at us. And that's when we were on the radio constantly telling people, and you remember, make yourself small. Get into a closet, get into a bathroom. Everything was going fine until my dear friends on television looked at the chart on the wall and said, oh my God, it's a category four, up to 18 feet of storm surge. Well, if you're in Punta Gorda Isles and you're with your family in a walk-in closet, and the man on TV that you trust, that you watch every night, says, okay, this is bad. You're going to get 18 feet of water. You know pretty much, if you're savvy, that you're at 9 or 10 feet in Punta Gorda Isles. And you do the math real quick. And down in the nether regions, you get that real uncomfortable feeling like, uh-oh, you know, what happens? Well, fortunately, knowing what I know, I was getting the reports from the hurricane hunters out in the Gulf that were flying the storm before it entered Charlotte Harbor. I knew how tiny the storm was. I also knew, watching the live feed from Fort Myers Beach on, I think it was NBC2, that the storm surge was only 5 or 6 feet from this storm. Well, it wasn't going to be any worse than that when it got here, if at all. Well, obviously, it turned out the water dropped 4 feet in the 3 hours before the storm at the old Holiday Inn there at the riverfront because mm-hmm. the winds were coming around out of the east and pushed the water out first. And then we subsequently got no storm surge. So the whole focus during the last 2 hours was to make sure people stayed away from windows and doors and stayed in a place where there was limited glass so that they would not be a victim of projectiles. And by and large, the people did a great job. We lost only 4 lives that day. And 2 of those deaths were people in a mobile home out off Florida Street.
I remember that.
And they were in a mobile home that was essentially 2x2s with tinfoil wrapped around it. It was a 1960s era mobile home, and they didn't stand a chance. The third death in Punta Gorda area was a gentleman in PGI in a third floor condo right across from where the yacht club is. There's an empty lot there now where that
yes.
building stood. It's gone. They've never rebuilt. Well, he was in the third floor. He owned the building and would not leave because he had a lady tenant on the first floor that he was worried about, and he wouldn't leave her. Well, a projectile hit the glass insert on the side of his front door, and a shard of glass about 18 inches long went into his thigh and severed the femoral artery, and he bled out there. So, but that's victim number two. Victim number four or three. Victim number four was a gentleman in Port Charlotte that ran out to get something off his boat, and a piece of electronic device of some sort, a piece of plywood took off the top of his head.
Right, he lived there. Right down the street from my adopted grandmother.
No
she
kidding.
Was yeah,
yeah
on Waterway Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Gene and Rube. Rubino.
That's that's where the fourth death occurred, and should have known better.
So you think one of the reasons that people are really they really don't feel like they feel like they're invincible?
No.
And you tell them because one of the things to be prepared is to have that safe room, right?
I don't think it's that, Doctor. I think the problem is that people have no experience with this type of disaster. They may come. Most of our folks come from the Midwest, all mm-hmm. right? We have a percentage that come from the upper Northeast. We have very, you know, when you think about it, in comparison to the East Coast of Florida, which is heavily laden with people from the greater New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts area, they've at least got a legacy of hurricanes, most recently Sandy just 3 years ago. But people right. who hail from Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and so forth, they have none. Now, they may have tornado experience. That's an entirely different animal. The mm-hmm. hurricane is the most powerful force on the face of the earth. There's nothing that does more damage. There's nothing that can take more lives. You know, the greatest loss of life in American or in world history was not the tsunami over there in Thailand and whatnot a few years ago. It was the mid-70s was a cyclone, which is a hurricane on the other side of the earth. A cyclone in Bangladesh that took over 500,000 lives. And they were all drowned.
Oh.
They were all drowned by storm surge. And our greatest loss of life in American history was the 1900 Galveston, Texas hurricane, which they stopped counting bodies at 8,000. And they began, because the disease was beginning to run rampant, they started piling the bodies up on the beach and just burning them. That's all they could do. And you know, that was one of the things that really started a revolution in this country in terms of meteorological progress and making progress in terms of a warning and notification system.
Well, I just know that when I went through Hurricane Charlie, it really was a comfort to hear your voice. You didn't freak out or wig out, you know, some people do. To hear your voice on the radio telling us, talking to us. You know,
communications is imperative. It really is, both before and after. But nothing is more important than those hours after the storm. And as we were talking earlier with Zane out front, Bob Alexander, Mike Moody, and Jeff Collins and others just did a tremendous job of keeping these stations, at the time, the Clear Channel stations, up and getting them running and getting us on the air. And I made it an imperative that we did briefings daily. I actually had some county leadership that told me, you know, you need to get off the radio. But this is because they don't understand my job. They don't understand my duties and my responsibilities. And I will never get off the radio. because without the radio, without the television, without Facebook, we have no link to our public and no way to let them know just what's going on. And in those days after Charlie, and as we were facing three subsequent hurricanes, we really needed to keep people grounded. We needed to keep them understanding that the help was here, more help was coming, that we weren't going to abandon them. We're going to get through this together. It's going to take time, but just, you know, let's be calm and be cool, and then give them directions where they could get various things like food. You know, we had food, water, and ice ready to distribute at 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon in the what was the Punta Gorda Mall parking lot. And that was an effort by the state of Florida and by us, but because we had learned through our experiences with Andrew in 92, George in 98, and some other storms, that we had to do this. We had to have these pods, points of distribution, ready to go as quickly as possible. And that stuff that came in to Punta Gorda was actually staged that day in Lakeland, was in Lakeland. And then Saturday morning, we moved it down here, set it up, and got it out on the streets.
Hello, caller. What's your name? Hello, caller. They didn't hang.
Beep, beep.
That's okay.
I wanted to add, I just wanted to add something, Wayne, here too, just to reassure everybody that, and I speak for Todd Matthews and Robin Craig, who are our management here. This facility here on Tissio Boulevard in Port Charlotte is ready for hurricane season. We do have, you know, state-of-the-art generator out back. We have state-of-the-art generators at each of our broadcast facilities. Our engineers are constantly, you know, monitoring and updating these. So if something were to happen, you are going to hear about it out there.
Well, the other thing we do, and Zane knows how we do this because he's taken many calls from me. Once we go into the what's called the cone of uncertainty, the five-day cone out from a storm, I initiate updates that I call. I have a number that I call here at the radio stations, and they record my message, and then they put that. It's called simulcast. They put that on all five of the iHeart stations so that people are hearing it across the various platforms, because you have some people listen to talk, some people listen to country, some people listen to the rock, but they'll get the message no matter where they happen to be.
But don't you think that your training and communication made you aware of the value of that? Because that's our society. We live on information, communication, being able to know what's the next thing to do.
I was the first in 1987. I was the first, and I'm still the only director that I know of that comes from a media background that has a degree in mass communication.
I think that's really important. So I asked you earlier, what is the number one thing or what number one that you recommend people to do before a hurricane?
Well, most importantly is to have a plan. And as part of that plan, have a kit, have a disaster supplies kit. I tell people all the time, there are certain things that you absolutely positively have to have. And number one on the list with a bullet is water. You've got to have water. Our population, particularly the seniors, all right, when the power goes out and the temperatures soar to the upper 90s,
dehydration.
If you don't have water, the dehydration will start very quickly and you will be dead within 24 hours. Some of you from your organs will shut down. Doctor, am I right? Am I wrong?
You need water.
Okay.
The elixir of life.
And
the elixir of life.
It's funny. When I ask the kids, I'll say,
you can live without food.
Well, I'll say, you're going to love this. I'll say to the kids, okay, here's the list. What's number one on it? What's the most important thing? And the kids will say, food. And I said, hey, wait a minute. Stop. Look at me. Look at this. I could go a month. All right. I wouldn't like it, but I could go a month and not suffer real physical harm without food. But in 48 hours, I'm in serious, serious medical dilemma without water.
Especially if you're on medicines.
Exactly.
Some of the older people are on a lot of different medications.
Correct.
Everything is a balance. That's one of the things, you know, one of my missions now is balancing people's hormones. Well, it isn't just hormones. If your electrolytes are not balanced, if you don't have... You're mostly made of water.
And here's the beverage right here, water.
Water.
Not soda, not coffee, not tea, not water. Water, water, water.
Correct. Now,
One gallon per person per day.
Okay. And what else do you recommend in that box?
Well, you need to have a radio with batteries. Right. I mean, everybody's not going to have a little digital television that they can watch the TV channels once the cable goes out. You'll love this story. We did a survey one time, and we said, of the utilities, the major utilities, phone, water, electric, cable, okay, which one is most important to you? Which one do you want to have turned back on first? And 41% of the people said cable.
Oh, no.
Which, without electricity, you're not going to have cable.
That's cute.
It was real cute. It was scary is what it was.
Hey, I live on a farm. Let me tell you, when that hurricane hit and there was no electricity to get water from your well, I had two horses.
You need a small generator out there.
Oh, I do have a generator now. But okay. I'm just saying, and I, when you have horses, they have to have water too.
Right.
You can't give them, hello, caller. What's your name?
Mercy.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mommy. How you doing?
Well, I got to tell you something. Hi, the show is fabulous, but of course, Wayne is incredible. I want to thank him 10 million times for keeping Charlotte County so safe, so informed, and he's quite a leader.
Yes.
And you can tell him that. Of course, I've known him since he was little, so.
Mm-hmm. I was little one time.
Thank him for all of Charlotte County. All right?
Thank you, Mercy.
Mom, thank you. And I know, don't get off the line. I know you and Wayne are also know each other from the hospital board.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We're on the hospital board together for years and years.
More than 30 years. We've been the Civic Advisory Council at now Bayfront Punta Gorda. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And he keeps us informed over there. And, you know, another thing you didn't even touch, Wayne is a fabulous sports newscaster.
I was going to bring it up. How long have you been doing that for the Tarpons?
Tonight actually began. Tonight is the spring game. They play South Fort Myers at 7:30 at Tarpon Stadium, and that will begin my 38th season at the microphone for Tarpon football. So.
Wow. And he's only a kid.
His mother was a wonderful woman.
She was indeed. Thank you, Mercy.
Okay, dear.
Oh, Mommy, thank you for coming.
Great to hear you.
I can remember. Thank you. I can remember, Shane, you're going to love this. I was 10 years old, and I was dragged into the port. It was not even promenades then. It was called, we're dragged into La Casa Dress Shop.
That was my mother's dress shop.
Yep.
Yeah, my mother, I said this on the air before, that my mother used to say, buy a dress so my daughter can become a doctor.
That is so cool.
Imagine that, huh?
That is so cool.
That's a mom with a plan.
That's a mom with a plan, because I always wanted to be a doctor. And hello, caller. We have another caller.
Hello there.
Hi, what's your name, caller?
Hey, this is Bob, and I'm talking to Wayne, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Wayne Saladay, and this is Dr. Elizabeth Triana, and Wayne is my guest. What's your question?
I just want to make kind of like a statement, I guess, but there was a lot that went on after the hurricane that wasn't associated with the hurricane, but it was. Like, for example, we had a horrible time with the state of Florida. When they were with their taxes, they were going to reassess everybody that rebuilt their homes. They were going to lose their homestead because of the amount of money it took to fix their homes. And that's the only reason why. And when they repaired the home, they were going to be reassessed at full market value, which was another disaster, a secondary problem for the public. And I tried to file a lawsuit against the state for gouging because the state was out gouging, filing suits against businesses that were gouging. And it turned out to be a mess, but we formed a committee, and it took 9 months. But finally, and the gentleman that was a tax collector for Charlotte County, what's his name?
Vic Desguin.
Frank Desguin was a hero in all of this because he understood the problem, and he said we were absolutely right, and he led the charge up in Tallahassee.
Well, Frank was the appraiser. His dad had preceded him, had been tax collector, but Frank was the appraiser when Charlie hit. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was an awful mess, Wayne.
And, yes.
And we were moving out. People were taking their insurance money and not fixing their homes because of this, and just packing up and leaving.
Well, listen, I'll tell you something. If you drive today down Midway Boulevard and start up at Kings Highway and drive Midway all the way down to 41, and just take a slow drive and have somebody with you and count on either side of Midway how many of those homes have still not replaced their roofs. They have tar paper. That's the minimum required by code is tar paper, okay, over the decking. But there's no shingles, there's no tiles, there's tar paper. And those are rental homes. I grew up in that neighborhood. I grew up on LaSalle, so I know very well what I'm talking about. But people have not replaced the roofs on those homes with anything but tar paper. And it's, but again, those are all rentals now, and the landlords have chosen to do the bare minimum of what was what was required.
Oh my God!
You're absolutely right on the money with being there when she needed to be, because we got knocked out of our 4-year-old home. It was totally wiped out, total.
Yeah.
And right in Brentstorm Marina. And next thing you know, where are we going to live? There were no apartments anywhere. There's no place to rent. There's no trailers, nothing. And what happens? We couldn't cook, couldn't eat, had no grills, had nothing. And right down the street, you folks came in with spaghetti and meatballs and water and all kinds of stuff right away. So hats off to what you did and the way you do it. So I just wanted to call up and compliment you a little bit. But we were
That's
able
wonderful.
To get the state, we were able to get the state law changed anyway.
Good. That's good.
We gave all these people.
That's great. Well, you know, the one thing that we have to remember, and I have to give credit to all those, and I talked earlier about those that came in to help us, the help that we received from the American Red Cross kitchens, from the Salvation Army, from the Baptist kitchens, and I could go on and on, Catholic Charities, the DRUM, the Disaster Relief of the United Methodist, but all those various organizations came together, and under the umbrella of what we call the VOAD, which is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster. And my VOAD coordinator, Dr. Harry Agabitis, who has been with me now for about 15, 16 years, a retired school superintendent from the Chicago area, and we were able to get all those people together and have them, moving. See, that's the whole idea. People say, well, what do you need an emergency manager? Well, the emergency management. Well, the emergency management is not me. It's not Wayne Saliday. It's a mindset. It's a community mindset and a community effort to keep everything moving forward. And we watched a year later as the people in the greater Louisiana, New Orleans area, they weren't moving forward. They were stagnating. There was no movement forward. Everything was try to pick up the pieces and try to post blame to each other and whatnot. And because their leadership failed them. And so it was a very sad thing to watch.
Well, Wayne, we're going to the end of the hour, and I want you to, you're so interesting to talk to. You have so many wonderful experiences, but can you talk about your program? Thank you, caller, by the way. You started a program which you've already received awards for the markers.
The collars on the stop signs.
Can you
signs.
Talk to us about that?
Well, yeah. We got the latest alliteration of the storm surge model. That's the model that's done by the Hurricane Center that shows us how much water we can expect from various type storms. The size of the storm, the speed of the storm, the winds of the storm, all these factors together.
Okay.
And they can actually predict. They've been doing this now for 26 years, since Hugo. They were spot on in Hugo predicting the surge. So I got tired of just handing people a map and saying, here, figure it out. The first thing we did was we created a computer program called Know Your Zone, where you can go on the internet, or if you don't have a computer, you can call us, give us your address, we'll go look it up, we'll let you know. But now, after we started this program in which we installed, we being 200 Charlotte County volunteers, some of them in their late 70s, early 80s, who went out
volunteers.
And hammered up 200 of them. I couldn't have any money for labor costs. I couldn't use Public Works. I couldn't use anybody. I got 200 Charlotte County helpers to go out and install 9,500 red, orange, yellow, and green reflective collars on stop signs and street signs across Charlotte County. And those areas that are marked represent evacuation zones. And when this county is forced, whether it's myself or my successor is forced to deal with an evacuation, they will tell people this is a red zone level A evacuation. And if you have a red collar nearby, then you know that it's time to go. Now, Punta Gorda doesn't have any collars. They wouldn't do it. They refuse to participate in the program.
The city but of as Punta Gorda?
Yes. But as I tell people, if you get up in the morning to make your coffee and look out the kitchen window and there's a boat in your backyard, you're in a red zone. You got a problem. Okay? So that's pretty simple to figure out. But red, orange, yellow, green are the four areas. The other part of the whole program, and there's the map behind you, right there on the wall. You can see them. I want the people in red and orange, all right, who are the most at risk. They're the closest to the water, to the rivers and the harbor. I want them to know who they know from work, from school, from church, from organizations, who lives in yellow and green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like, oh, I don't know, like Betsy out on Washington Loop, you know? People like that, okay? They've got to know who those people are, okay? Now, where's mom live now?
Going to Arcadia.
Where's mom live now?
Punta Gorda.
Okay. She probably needs to come stay by you if a hurricane's coming, because you're up on higher ground out there than anywhere she is, because the city, there's nobody in the city higher than 7 feet. Nobody.
Really? Well, but everybody thought going to Arcadia was safe, and look what happened.
Well, yeah, but we all focus on the Turner Center and the fact that the Turner Center came down.
Oh.
Otherwise, in Arcadia, there weren't, I mean, yes, the winds were a problem, okay? But you weren't, you know, the chances are if you hide from the wind and run from the water, your chances of survival are increased by 90%. Because worldwide, 90% of the deaths are from storm surge.
From storm surge. Wow, this has been such an interesting show. I'm telling you, and I wanted to also bring up that emergency management doesn't just involve weather. You were talking about 9/11.
Oh yeah,
homeland. And I know we only have a few minutes, but I thought that was fascinating. We're just going to have you back on the show.
We'll
That's it.
Be more than happy to do that. But yes, I'm part of what's called the Regional Domestic Security Task Force, which involves all law enforcement, fire, emergency management, and public health, those four disciplines. And we meet together regularly, exchange ideas and whatnot. But we are the core group that keeps this region protected from terrorism.
That is wonderful.
And I speak for a lot of people when I say that I sleep better at night knowing that Wayne's at the helm, you know, at a hurricane season especially.
Yes. When does it start? Pretty soon here, right?
Yeah, next week, June 1.
Okay.
And we've already had a storm, Anna.
I know, which I know. I follow you on Facebook, so I see that.
And don't listen to the predictions of a below normal sea. Even if it is, one storm.
All you
is
need
all
is
takes.
One.
There you go.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Wayne Saliday. What a great show. Thank you for coming and being our guest. Thank you for all the callers. Thank you, Zane. This is Dr. Elizabeth Triana, and God bless and stay healthy.
WCCF, Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte.